giving you guys a talk about the FHP. What is this? Okay. The findings we had from this summer, we're compiling in our conditions report. Jason Moan is going to kind of split duties with me. He's going to be focusing more on some of the pests that are going to be south of the Alaska Range. I'll be looking at more of what's going on up here. There is some crossover for both of us, but we're just going to kind of split those duties between the two of us. Okay. So just going to give you kind of some changes we've seen in some various species, where they're being found, a little bit of biology as well, and some stuff, additional studies that I've been looking at here. For northern spruce engraver, obviously this is the bark beetle of the interior. We have Rufipennis, but it's not as big an issue up here. So this is our big bark beetle up here in the interior. This year we mapped a little over 14,000 acres of mortality. This is a bit of an increase, 55% of an increase since 2015, but still not quite up into the numbers that we saw maybe a decade ago, where there was about 45,000 acres here in the interior being hit by this beetle. So, but still, that increase is definitely something we want to keep an eye on. The majority of the damage that we mapped, over 8,000 acres of it, was between Delta Junction and Tok. And this is definitely a point of concern. I have this figure here that was provided to me by Jason Moan. This has to do with this blue blob you see here is a wind event back in 2012 that knocked down a substantial number of spruce. And that over 8,000 acres that have been impacted was in this blob, or whatever you want to use, call it. And the thing that's kind of worrisome about this is that in 2015, we'd only mapped about 665 acres of mortality. Now it's increased to over 8,000. And we flew about the same number of acres in both of those years. 2014, it was only a little over 100 acres that were mapped, but we don't have the data on how many acres we flew at that point. But still, we're seeing a sizable increase in northern spruce and graver populations in this area. I know that Tok has put in for some western bark beetle funds. We'll see if they can get that, and maybe we can do some mitigation for some of these, for some of this damage. So this is definitely something we're going to want to keep an eye on here in the near future. Okay, amber mark birch leaf miner. I'm just going to give you a little bits of lots of different pests here. Those of you who are in Fairbanks know that Fairbanks has been hit pretty badly this last year. A lot of our birch trees were turning this beautiful mucus brown color at the end of July, beginning of August. There are also two additional, these are all invasive sawflies, European sawflies, that are in our Alaskan birch. So late birch leaf edge miner and birch leaf leaf miner. So back in 2006, Cynthia Snyder, she was FHP staff back then, had done a road survey to assess the intensity. You guys see these words? Probably not, of these outbreaks in Alaska. She did a road survey. What I want to draw your eye to is this red blob down in Anchorage, where there's a level of heavy infestation, which is 60% of the leaves had been in, were infested in individual trees that they were observing. And then you can see up here in Fairbanks, where it was relatively low or just present, where that means less than 30% of trees here were infested, or leaves in a tree were infested. Well, I wanted to go out and redo this survey, see how things were going now, 10 years later. And Isaac and I drove around the interior here, and Stephen Garrett drove around down south, and we got this. We didn't actually do the high density down there in Anchorage, and we ran into some private property issues, so those are what those black dots are. But what you can see is down in Anchorage, the population seems to have dropped. There are still a couple of high-level infestations. Any of you who maybe been near Eagle River, I know we got some complaints, even got some phone calls up here about Eagle River, about the level of infestation there. So that's definitely something that's kind of dropped down there. But if you look up here in Fairbanks, you can see that the population has definitely kind of increased. We have high density. All of our trees were pretty much impacted, not only Fairbanks, but also North Pole. Went out to Skinny's Roadhouse and a little bit beyond North Pole on the Richardson. So this is something I want to keep kind of an eye on. I'm just going to do some kind of annual looks here just in the Fairbanks area, see if it kind of expands out. You'll notice that there's not a lot of infestations between Fairbanks and Anchorage. So this tells me that the wasp probably traveled in on ornamentals, been transported by us. They are parthenogenic, so you really only need one female to arrive to infest an area. And some of you guys might be able to tell me, I've looked through the literature and I'm not exactly sure where the amber mark comes from. I just kind of assume it's these amber-colored ocelli on their head. Do you guys know where it gets the terminology? Okay. Well, then that's what I'm going to go with for up here anyway. But also with the drop in Anchorage, we're not exactly sure why that is, what's going on with the population, why we're seeing a decline, if it's a natural oscillation. Now, one possibility is there has been an increase in late birch leaf edge miner. And this is only seeing the map down here in South Central because that's the only location we mapped it this year. We didn't find it up here in the interior. But you can see these are extremely low levels, so only just present or not present, present being less than 5% of the leaves being infested, so very small amount. The idea that this small amount is then dropping the amber mark so substantially that we saw, I find unlikely. You can find them in the same tree. In fact, you can find them in the same leaf. But you know, since they're competing for these valuable resources, it's definitely something you want to think about, but I just don't think their population is high enough to explain that drop. Additionally, back in 2004-2008, there was a release of Lathrolestes thompsoni, which is Nycnumon and parasitoid. Majority of it, 3,600 individuals, were released in Anchorage, but you can see there's a couple other locations here. They went back here recently and monitored those sites, those release sites, and the population had dropped there. But they also paired those sites with non-release sites, and the population had dropped there as well. So the population did decline. These little ladies may have played a part in it, but something else is probably also knocking these populations down. And then a third possibility is probably a behavioral one, and this is kind of the one that I'm thinking. The females tend to prefer to oviposit, well, they're all females, they're parthenogenic, prefer to oviposit on leaves that have already been oviposited by other females. And so in high density populations, you can actually get a high number of eggs on an individual leaf. And an individual larva requires about 5.3 centimeters squared of leaf material to complete development. And they found that when the number of eggs on an individual leaf approaches 10, mortality approaches 100%. So it could be that in these high density populations, they're just kind of wiping themselves out with high larva mortality. But then that could mean that you're gonna get some oscillation. So when the population gets knocked down, then they're gonna start to build back up till they get high and then knock back down. So we'll just definitely have to keep an eye on what's going on with those populations. For those of you who are interested in trying to figure out which species you have, there's a great paper by Digweed et al, 2009. You can see amber mark prefers to oviposit in the center of the leaf on the veins, where late birch leaf edge miner prefers to oviposit on the outer edges. And so these are two key species that, so that's why I'm just talking about these two. There are two other invasive sawflies, birch sawflies, in North America, but they are not here in Alaska as of yet. So we're going to want to keep a close eye on looking for those. I hate these names. So we have the late birch leaf edge miner. The other two that are not here is the early birch leaf edge miner and then the birch leaf edge miner. So if anybody is interested in, you know, keeping an eye on these as well, this is the paper, Digweed et al, 2009. If you guys, I can also send you a PDF of this if you'd like. I'm going to give you the information. This goes into the biology of the two of the five species, and it has great dichotomous keys for not only the damage, but the larvae and the adults. So if you guys are interested, this is an excellent paper. Okay, birch leaf roller. Since we were out looking at birch trees this summer, a lot of birch trees, we also looked for birch leaf roller. Those of you who may have been looking up in our trees here in the interior would notice that this is pretty much in almost every birch tree we have up here now. And we went north, south, east, it was in all. Now, when I got here, I was told that birch leaf roller was predominantly this Epinotius landriana, which is on the bottom on your right. We took leaves from all around Fairbanks, 25 miles north, 25 miles south, reared them out, and all we got was Calyptilia strictella, this bottom picture here. So none of the Epinotia. So I didn't know if maybe this one species is that they're competing for each other and this one's building up and pushing it out. I'd like to do some additional rearing this summer and see if we can find Epinotia. I know they found Epinotia down in southeast, that Liz had done some genetic work with that and then reared them out. So this acreage that we found that we mapped this year, this 26,000, I think is way under undervalued. It's kind of hard to see from the plane, just the leaf rollers, but so I think it's much, much higher than that. But the leaf rollers were predominantly here in the interior. Garrett and Steve, you guys can say you didn't see too much of it, or comparatively down south. Is that accurate? Yeah. So definitely something we're going to want to keep an eye on here in the future as well, just for fun. Large aspen tortrix. We mapped 15,000 acres of this species this year. This is actually a drop from what we had mapped last year, 2015, which was around 20,000 acres. I think this could partly do, here's a picture of an outbreak out in Blair Lake. You can see where the aspen has been defoliated and then the non-host birch there in the center, relatively untouched. But I think the reason we saw this drop is that several of these outbreaks here in the interior have collapsed, including that Blair Lake. There was two outbreaks in Blair Lake. I went out there in June. One of the sites was completely, couldn't find a caterpillar and there was no evidence of overstory defoliation. The other one had slight defoliation in the overstory that you could see, but none of the understory webbing that we see here. When the caterpillars have completely defoliated the overstory, they drop into the understory and eat everything when they're starving. But we didn't find any of that. I did collect some specimens. That's a picture there. Then also there was another outbreak just north of town here on Goldstream Road. These pictures are actually from that outbreak in 2015. So these are in end of June, beginning of July, I believe. You can see the aspen has been completely defoliated and the understory is completely webbed. Isaac and I went out there when we actually stopped being lost and found the location. there was no evidence of overstory defoliation. Again, we did collect some caterpillars from the understory, brought them back, reared them out, mostly for our own enjoyment. But one of the things I did want to kind of show your draw your eye to was this little lady here. So it's an external ectoparasitoid. We reared these out as well. And we got these glypta wasps, what we believe is glypta inversa, which is a common parasitoid here. That's what we think it is. So silly forest entomologists trying to figure these things out. But I don't believe that she's the cause of this drop. Large aspen tortrix typically go into outbreak, last for 2-3 years, and then collapse on their own, generally due to starvation. But I'm sure that these parasitoids are taking advantage of when they have a lot of these their hosts available as well. Okay, eastern spruce budworm. Fumiferana is primarily up north of the range, and then ori is what you're going to find mostly south of the range, at least that's my understanding. I did do some ori trapping up here. We got a few individuals, but nothing compared to what we found for Fumiferana. We only mapped 800 acres of this species here, and most of it, or all of it, was in the interior. But we did have some elevated trap captures west of Fairbanks. I put a string of bucket traps between Fairbanks and Nenana, and we got some elevated numbers. And by elevated numbers, we go we'll check these every 2 weeks during peak flight season at the end of June, beginning of July. We catch in endemic populations around 50 individuals in a trap. This year we caught a couple hundred individuals in the trap. We went and looked for damage and didn't find any. As of yet, but we're definitely going to want to keep an eye on that. Also, that being said, there was an outbreak in Eagle of a spruce budworm. So here we have a Google Earth image. There's Eagle, and this is where Jason and I flew over this last year, and this is where, or this last summer, and this is where we mapped the outbreak there. In other parts of the terrains, these outbreaks can last up to 10 years or even over, so we're going to have to keep an eye on that. I want to do some additional trapping considering this, just to kind of look around the state. So I want to go north of Fairbanks, do my normal run between Fairbanks and Nenana, but go all the way up north, do trapping along the way there, using some sticky traps so we don't have to go every 2 weeks, and see what the populations are doing there as well. Just kind of, since we see this outbreak here, we'll see if we're going to find it, outbreak it anyplace else. Okay, willow leaf blotch miner. This is pretty much big increase for this. We mapped 145,000 acres of willow blotch miner this last summer. It's a slight increase, 280% compared to the year before. So, and the majority of this was in the interior. So 136,000 acres here in the interior, and 100,000 of that, was in the Yukon Flats. So when we flow over that area, if you saw willow, you saw willow leaf blotch miner. It was very easy to find the willow because it was orange when you look down there. So this is something I'm kind of curious, as does anybody knows, what kind of effect these willow blotch miners and aspen leaf miners are having on the nutritional quality of these plants, and how that may be affecting moose and all that other stuff when they're eating. Does anybody know anything about that?
Question's been asked for 20 years.
Oh, okay. So
nobody's answered.
Well, I'm just new, so I just thought, you know, that's definitely something, especially since it's just everywhere, and the aspen leaf miner, which I'm about to get to, is too, so I'm just kind of curious. So this is something that's a question I'd like to maybe look more into in depth while I'm up here as well.
I mean, ask Fishing Game.
Yeah, that's what I was,
have any anecdotal information.
Okay.
I think I remember that this doesn't hit the felt leaf willow. It's like all, right. a bunch of others, but the felt leaf is safe.
Okay. For aspen leaf miner, we saw an increase in that this year, 200,000 acres. This is not at the level of what we saw back in the early 2000s, where it was up to 700,000 acres being mapped. But this is the most numbers we've found since 2010, where there was 400,000 acres mapped. So this is 152% increase from 2015. Additionally, two researchers over at UAF, Diane Wagner and Pat Doak, are very interested in the effect that these insects are having on the trees. As I said, that's kind of what my area of interest is. So we did a little small project this summer where we examined leaf gas exchange in infested trees. We had an insecticide spray on one and then controls on the other that had the moths in it. So looked at stomatal conductance and photosynthesis. And then we also looked at tree water relations, particularly pre-dawn and midday water potentials. For those of you who don't know what water potentials is, it's the amount of pressure exerted on the soil to draw water from the soil up into the leaves. And if the vascular tissue has been compromised, if you have something growing into it or stressing it out, you're going to get a more negative water potential. And it's kind of like almost taking the tree's temperature, obviously not temperature, but you can really assess a tree's health by looking at this. So we went out this 2016 and took these measurements. This is the LICOR, and that's a pressure chamber. So what you can do is you excise a leaf, you put it in this pressure chamber, and you squeeze it with nitrogen gas. And the amount of pressure it takes to squeeze the water out of the leaf was the amount of pressure that had been exerted on the soil to draw the water into the leaf in the first place. So you can measure their vascular tissue. And then they have these tables that you can look at, and you can assess how much of the vascular tissue has been compromised based on the number that you get per individual species in a location. So it's a great way to assess tree health. So these are some preliminary data that we're showing. We still have a lot of work to do. We want to do some additional things here. But for photosynthesis, our controls, so these are the ones with the moths, you can see that the photosynthesis was reduced. Again, we're still we're doing more with this compared to the insecticides. And then when we look at the stomatal conductance, again, the number in the moth-infested leaves was also reduced. This makes sense considering we know that the moth is feeding in the epidermis of the leaf, and it's destroying the guard cells and basically causing the stomates to slam shut. So they're not being able to take in the carbon dioxide for the photosynthesis. So we're kind of seeing some of that effect here with these. Now, aspen is typically an isohydric species, which means it has a very tight control over its water loss. If it starts getting stressed, it can close those stomates to kind of protect its vascular tissue. But these guys kind of took that away from them just by forcing them for that to happen. When we look at water potentials, so with the pre-dawn water potentials, you see that there was actually more negative among the infested plants than there was in the non-infested plants. Now, this time frame is typically when the plants are the most relaxed. The sun is not high in the sky, it's pre-dawn. Although up here we don't really have pre-dawn, when dusk bleeds into dawn, but still the least stressed time frame. And so we're seeing an increase in stress in the vascular tissue here. At this point in time, this level is not reaching a level that we're seeing a lot of conductivity loss in the vascular tissue. But it'd be interesting if we were to include a stress or water stress effect into these and see what would happen then. Maybe do some south slope, some other kind of things, just kind of see what the impact of that would be. When we do the midday, on the other hand, we see the flip-flop. that the insectus, the trees that the moth has been prevented from going into actually has more negative water potential. And again, this is further evidence that the stomates are slammed shut because we're not seeing this more negative. And this, what we're kind of seeing here is the plants tend to operate at a very thin border of where they're about to cavitate, where their tissue is about. That way they can bring in the most CO2 and conduct the most photosynthesis. So they kind of walk the line on a key point here. What would have been interesting to do is to take another stomatal conductance measurement later in the afternoon or under stressful conditions that maybe we would have seen the plants shut down their stomates. Then we might have seen something a flip-flop here because we would have seen some of the water loss going through the galleries. So that's what I think this is that the water is going through the galleries, which means they're losing water, but they're not gaining the benefit of picking up the CO2 that they would for photosynthesis that they would be getting from their stomates. So this is something we might be looking at here, including a stress factor and some additional variables through the day. So we'll see what we can come with that here in the future. Okay, one last thing, brown marmorated stink bug. So I'm sure you guys have all heard of this. Back east, it's a real problem, and down here in the Pacific Northwest, it's a problem. Well, we had an individual from Juneau office go down to Oregon. She was well aware of these insect problems, took precautions, looking through her clothes and her suitcase and all this other stuff, and nonetheless brought two specimens back by accident that they were luckily found in our lab, which is like the worst place for an insect to show up, but good for us. We do not know if they can become established in Alaska, but I'd rather not give them the opportunity to try. So if you guys are gonna be traveling down in that area, like I will be here in the near future, just wanna keep a close eye. So we did have them show up in Alaska, however briefly. And that's all I got for you. So if you guys have some questions. Yes?
You mentioned one of the birch leaf miners, I think it was the Ember marked, prefers to oviposit on leaves that already have other eggs on it?
Correct.
Do you have any idea if that's to overwhelm plant defenses or overwhelm parasitoids or some other reason? It seems like given the cost, there must be some benefit.
Yeah, well, when the populations are low, the oviposition behavior changes drastically. Oh, okay. The females become very finicky. They look, they search, they may oviposit a few eggs and then move on, maybe come back. They're very picky about it. And then when the high density populations, and you start moving up, that pickiness or whatever starts to drop down. And it might be something in them that says, okay, somebody else thought this was good, so it must be good, and then oviposit some eggs. They have found numbers of like 200 eggs on an individual leaf, which obviously they're not gonna make it. So, but yeah.
So was that the Aspen Tortrix, was that, what's it, Frank Clem's property off of Farmer's Loop?
Cranberry Trail
was like a...
It was near Goldstream.
Summit Trail?
It's the only time I've seen it was, I think it was off of Farmer's Loop a couple of years back, and it was, incredible.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
it was like wintertime in the summer, very strange.
Yeah, because you also get the webbing down the snow, it's white down below, and the overstory is completely defoliated.
I think we wanted to check out that place, but we couldn't really figure out where to access it.
The other one?
The other.
No, I think this was the one that was from the 2015. Yeah, it was on the trail.
Mm. A couple of years ago, it was really bad at the top of Toboggan.
Oh, yeah, I think that's where we were. Oh. Yeah. That's where we were.
So like I said, the outbreaks don't tend to last very long. So it's usually 2 or 3 years and then they're gone until they build back up again. So I'm sure they'll crop up here in the near future, so yeah.
Was there any mortality in the portraits or did they refoliate? Or both? Was it some mortality, some refoliate?
I didn't see any mortality in these sites actually that I could address to that. I mean, I would have expected to see more, but I didn't see any standing dead. So no, I didn't see any mortality.
Was it refoliation in the summer? Anybody?
Well, the ones that we went to, they were refoliating. That was the problem. When we run our aerial surveys kind of in July and August, it's a lot of it's refoliated.
So you get some...
Reflushed. Some. Yeah. That's a problem too with amber mark. It doesn't lend itself so much to our aerial surveys because when we're flying, they're not really, really bad. Yeah. So it'd be great if we had the money and we could fly like all summer long, but.
That's great that you raised out that parasitoid, the glypta.
Yeah.
Yeah, did you check the database, the checklist, to see if that's reported from Alaska?
It's been glypta reported in Alaska.
Inversa?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we looked at a paper that documented every parasitoid that was
for here.
In your mind, it's, yeah.
Yeah, I've got that paper I can give it to you, but no, we didn't check the database.
Yeah. And that was just the most common, and we also got some...
Well, we looked at the wing venations
to
kind of help figure it out.
Yeah, the wing key that helped us determine what that was.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm still new to looking, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great.
When you are looking at the damage on the birch trees, are you finding like multiple species, like birch leaf rollers, and then also you find the leaf miners and all that all in one
birch
tree?
Yes.
Yeah.
But it seems to me, and this was anecdotal, that the whole leaf wasn't consumed among the birch leaf roller leaves, as far as the amber mark wasn't consuming, that the blotches maybe were a little smaller.
Okay.
I'm curious to see what kind of impact they would have on one another,
yeah.
But I don't know. Yeah. Turf war.
Yeah, turf war.
Okay.